Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is me, Veronica Monet, your host for the Shame Free Zone. I got to tell you, it's good to be back. I had a great time in Seattle. I was doing the keynote at Sex 2.0. That was a conference about sex. A lot of people ask me, what is Sex 2.0? We had sex workers. We had sex educators. We had kinky people, poly people, authors, just anybody whose life is about talking about sex, politicking about sex was there. And my keynote was about feminism, sex, and social networking, and that was really the subject of the conference, obviously. So while I was there, I also gave a couple of breakout sessions. I did one with several other illustrious sex educators called Media Whore, Tips from a Pro, or Tips from Pros. And then I also did one called the Whore Madonna Complex, which was really well attended bright and early in the morning. I was so impressed. And I had a great deal of fun, wore a short miniskirt and a push-up bra, and talked about our assumptions about appearance and the double bind that we put women into. So anyway, and then I came back and did a workshop in Santa Cruz over at Pure Pleasure. It's turning out to be a favorite hangout of mine. It's the second time I've done a presentation there. We had a fairly decent turnout. Not a lot of people in attendance, but everybody that showed up was awesome, and they were wide awake and eager for information. And that workshop was called Rub Me the Right Way. And I gave demonstrations about how to find G-spots and prostates. So, no, I didn't use any real human bodies. I used what's called a fleshlight. It looks like a vagina and a flashlight merged into one. Anyway, that's my little tease for you. It'll let you know where I've been and why you had to listen to a rerun last week. I've got a great show lined up for you tonight. We're going to be running a little bit past the hour. And the topic tonight is going to be how to expand an orgasm and have a full body orgasm, how to be more emotionally and spiritually connected, and how to experience more pleasure during giving and receiving touch. And I have two guests with me tonight, Valerie Green and Bruce Lindsay. Now, they are actually a couple. And Valerie is a certified life coach. She's been practicing sensual body work and teaching sensual empowerment for the past 11 years. She's also worked as a film editor, a yoga teacher, holistic counselor. She's got 1,000 hours of Swedish massage training and tantra and conscious intimacy with the grandfather of tantra, Charles Muir. Also has worked with Laurie Handlers, our very own Laurie Handlers here on BBS Radio. And many other people are on this list. Mama Gina out of New York. If you don't know about Mama Gina, check her out on the internet. Body Electric, one of my favorites. That was originally started by Joseph Kramer, a friend of mine. And One Taste. One Taste was started by Nicole Dedan. I've actually taught classes there for a whole year out of San Francisco, so I always consider that my home away from home. And another, this woman's got so many credentials, I could go on all night. She's also a sexological body worker. That was another one of Joseph Kramer's babies. So she spent the last 9 years studying yoga, meditation, Qigong is how I say it. Some people say Qigong, martial arts, tantric and Taoist sexual practices, Reiki, massage. So I think this woman really knows about being embodied. Now, her partner, Bruce Lindsay, is an artist, a sensual body worker, and a creativity expert. He's been teaching and leading groups for the past 20 years, and he likes to bring the masculine energy with his dynamic presence and emotional sensitivity into all his work. I'm guessing he's not shy about promoting his attributes either. Anyway, he's studied many spiritual paths and sexuality practices most recently as a tantric educator at Barbara Corrales' Urban Tantra. Another friend of mine, Barbara Corrales. Now, I haven't actually taken this Urban Tantra class. I was going to take it in May because they were actually doing it in San Francisco, but my schedule didn't allow for it. So anyway, I'll have to find out what Bruce picked up about that. And he's also initiated in Ipsilu tradition of tantric Kriya yoga. I definitely want to hear about that because I think I had a Kriya a couple years ago. So anyway, Bruce and Valley are a romantic couple, and they use their relationship as a spiritual practice. Together, Valerie and Bruce have a professional practice teaching conscious sensuality called Ideal Intimacy. And Ideal Intimacy is actually the name of their website. So if you want to jot over there right now, I'm going to post this to Facebook. If you're listening on Facebook, that link again is www.idealintimacy.com. You can follow along with us. Bruce and Valerie, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thanks. Thank you. That's a very comprehensive introduction. I appreciate
that. Well, you guys have a lot of credentials, so it was my pleasure. And you've done all the groovy things that I wish I had done by now.
those are definitely all places that I've studied with. I mean, I didn't do the sexological bodywork training, for example.
Oh, okay.
I did the correspondence course.
Right.
Lori Handler has her own training, which I didn't do, but I've done a lot of courses with her. But I've definitely studied with all those people, and they're all amazing.
And that counts for something. It definitely does. I mean, I studied with Cozy Fabian's Ancient Sacred Prostitution, and then I did Fire Breath Orgasms with Jawala. So I didn't get certified in either one of those, but I think it counts. Of course, you know, people like to see those letters after your name, so
that's what I love about my approach and our approach is that we don't, you know, follow any one philosophy. We really try to find out what works for the person that's feeding us. And, you know,
right,
we just draw upon everything that we've learned for ourselves.
Well, it's really important. I think, you know, one of the things that was so fun for me about teaching this workshop in Santa Cruz last week was just being able to say, yes, I'm a certified sex educator, and yes, I'm a certified sexologist, but you know what you really want to know is I've got a lot of experience.
Right, exactly.
Because reading a book and taking a workshop is not the same as actually doing it, especially doing it with a lot of different people. You know, there's a lot of different people out there. So if you have, in my case, that's my strength, is having worked with a lot of different male and female bodies. But anyway, you guys are going down a different path, which is honing your expertise with your partner. And I'd like to bring Bruce in here. Bruce, could you tell us a little bit about what was it like taking Urban Tantra with Barbara Corrales?
Oh, that was an amazing class. I was really, really a huge blessing for me that I was able to attend it. It was 4 days long, and the whole class was composed of people who were working in some field of sexuality or sensuality. You know, we had professional dominatrixes in the class, as well as tantricas and bikinis. And some other people who were just really interested in sort of expanding a sense of integrating sexuality to their spiritual healing practices. So there's a nice diverse group, everyone really open-minded. And if you're familiar with Barbara's book, Urban Tantra, largely the class went through the major concepts that she presents there. And she coupled each one of those concepts with an experiential exercise that really got us to sort of embody these ideas and integrate them. And then we'd always take time to digest that and share what our individual experiences were with the group so we could get more from each other as well.
Cool. Cool. Now, I've actually had Barbara on my radio show as a guest, but I haven't met her in person. I think she's a very dynamic person from what I can tell.
Oh, definitely. She really keeps the crowd. She has a tremendous style in personally and teaching. I mean, it's almost hard to sort of tell the difference. You know, her when she's teaching, she has such an open and friendly way of communicating, but still able to sort of hold the space and keep the focus of the group. It just makes for a really comfortable environment, which always helps with these sort of topics.
Well, now tell us. Let's back up a little bit. We've got some idea of just how much expertise the two of you have. But tell us about your relationship. And Valerie, I'm going to ask you. Tell me how you met Bruce. Okay, have we lost Valerie?
That's funny.
Sorry about that. No, I'm not
he doesn't remember meeting you, Bruce. No.
Oh my God, did we meet?
How long have you guys been together for 11 years? Did I get that right?
No. I've been teaching sensual empowerment in different ways for 11 years, but we've actually only been a couple for a little under 2 years.
Oh, you still have new relationship energy.
We do. And it's always changing and shifting as well. It was one of those things where, we definitely had a connection when we first met, but it just keeps getting stronger, you know, through, the passion, in my opinion, and the connectedness feels stronger as we go along, as opposed to it being, like, starting off with a bang and then, you know, slowly fizzling out, like a lot of relationships that I've been in. But we actually met through a party that was organized by a friend of ours, Donia Love, who you interviewed a few weeks ago.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's a wonderful networker and organizer, and she had a barbecue in her backyard, and we both showed up. And then from there,
She loves to connect people. Did she connect the two of you?
Not intentionally. She wasn't like the matchmaker, but we both showed up at the party, and it was the kind of thing where we definitely connected at first. But this beginning of our relationship is interesting because we felt very close very quickly, and it was to the point where I was going to Burning Man that year, and he wasn't planning on going, but even though I'd only known him a few weeks, I invited him to share my tent with me, which I don't know if you know.
You are just a total slut. No.
Well, okay, the opposite. I mean, we stayed together the whole time, and after
now, Valerie, you got to understand, here in the shame-free zone, I use the word slut and whore very affectionately.
Oh, yes. Well, it's certainly, you know... I've had my fair share of partners before Bruce, so there's definitely no shame about that.
Okay,
but what I was impressed by was, I mean, I don't know, I assume you've been to Burning Man, but there's 50,000 people there, and
Right. Everybody
is expressing themselves freely, and I really didn't have the desire to do anything apart from Bruce. The whole time. And, of course, we
Sand gets in all the wrong places. Nobody bathes the whole time they're there, so
right.
I don't blame you.
We did have sex a couple times there, but we use a lot of baby wipes, let me tell you. But anyway, but by the end of that week, I mean, you know, sharing this little tent together for the whole week, we felt like we'd known each other already for years.
Wow.
It's, you know, the intensity of that experience is... something that will definitely make or break a relationship, at least from our experience.
Right.
So after that, we were sort of like, okay, we're together,
That was the first party we ever went to together. I think that was sort of like our first real social outing. We'd only been dating a couple of weeks. So that was
By the way, you want to, like, stay with me in this tiny little tent for a whole week? But I don't know. I mean, there's something about my body and my mind and my being that just trusted him.
Well, you know, they say it's sense of smell. Particularly with women. They've done this survey that women are, they feel safe when they smell a man's underarms.
That's true. I actually do, you know, I'm not bothered by the smell of his underarms. I mean, I do, like, I've heard that, too. And so sometimes, like, when he's really sweaty, I'll smell him and go, oh, good, that doesn't turn me off. It actually smells good. All right, good. That means I'm with the right person.
Absolutely. It's funny. I don't know if you've ever tried online dating, but that's one of the things that's missing from online dating is sense of smell.
Oh, yeah.
So you can feel like emotionally compatible with somebody, but until you're actually in the same room with them and you can tell whether or not you're going to resonate with their odor, it's not really a done deal.
That's
at least
true.
Not for me.
It's funny, I've never done the online dating, but only because I felt like because I teach people about sexuality that people would make assumptions about me, you know, through, like, I'd rather have someone meet me in person and get to know me as a person rather than being like, ooh, I want to date her, she's a sex educator, you know?
Right.
Like,
well, I can tell you, I've only done it once, and I don't recommend it. For that very reason, turned out to be. Anyway, without going into that, I agree with you. Not such a good thing when you've got this kind of a profile.
Right. Just kind of gives off the wrong idea because, I mean, I'm actually, you know, I'm quite, like, I feel like our relationship has just as much to do with the emotional and mental and spiritual connection as it does the physical, but still, I mean, we teach people a lot of physical practices, and I feel like that's...
Well, now, do you make that separation between the physical and the spiritual, or do you see them as being related?
Oh, of course, everything's related. But I do feel like separating out, like if there's a lack of connection, I think it's a good idea to see where that is. Because, for example, I mean, we were talking about this earlier, for me, talking about the purpose of our relationship, which is completely, you know, spiritually, mentally, emotionally intertwined, that's what makes me, like, if I feel like our relationship has a purpose of, you know, what does it mean to love each other fully? What does it mean to have, you know, our relationship be about growth and, you know, supporting each other's desires instead of requiring you to follow my desires, like that. Those are, I mean, granted, it's all related, but that's not so much of a physical issue as it is an emotional, spiritual issue. Like talking about that and connecting on that level is part of what turns me on. You know, so if a couple comes to me and they're like, "We're not connected," then maybe the issue is around, you know, they're not connecting mentally or they're not connecting spiritually. So we'll talk about that as opposed to delving right into the physical practices because maybe that'll make them feel more attracted to each other and that'll, you know, when we get to the physical practices, we'll ignite everything. So I do
Absolutely.
Feel like, yeah, so not separating them. I mean, everything's overlapping and, you know, interconnected. And one
well,
thing
so,
about
that, so tell us, how you two are able to expand. First, let's talk about expanding an orgasm, and then maybe we can move into the full body orgasm. Tell us about expanding orgasms. What's involved in expanding an orgasm? And first of all, maybe define that for us. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, thank you. Well, most people think of an orgasm as being just a genital release. So, you know, you're there, you're building energy, you're building passion, you're like, oh, and the energy is building, and then achoo, it's like a genital sneeze, kind of.
Right.
you know, the release happens just from the genitals.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's
an involuntary release at that.
Right. Right. So the definition of an orgasm, as I've understood it, is it's just an involuntary muscular release. Right, so that can happen in the genitals, and that's what most people think of as an orgasm. But expanding the orgasm uses techniques such as expanding the breath, and especially focusing the sensation, focusing on the entire body with your attention. So if you're breathing with your entire body, because as you notice, as you move closer to orgasm, and you can try this the next time you're having sex or self-pleasuring, your body wants to tighten up, and your breath wants to get shorter, and your awareness just moves down to your genitals or to, you know, a fantasy of what's turning you on so that it can move down to your genitals, and that's because your genitals are gearing up to release. But if you do the opposite and you breathe with your whole body and you put your attention on your whole body and you make sound to vibrate the whole body and you're, you know, moving with your whole body instead of just thrusting your pelvis, then what happens is that the energy or the sensation, as you can call it, begins to expand. And then when you orgasm, first of all, you'll feel the orgasm all over your body. And for both men and women, they actually tend to last longer that way. So, I mean, a lot of times you'll see when women are, like, trying to force themselves to come, they'll kind of, like, tighten up and go, because that can, you know, help you to come quicker. But it's usually just felt as, like, this genital release as opposed to the whole body, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, absolutely, it makes sense. So, so the idea that you're talking about then is engaging the belly, the PC muscles, and the breath.
Certainly, that's definitely part of it. And, right, because the pelvic floor muscles definitely help to, like, pump, as act as a pump to increase the sexual energy. And then also making sound really helps because sound vibrates. If you feel like, that definitely, like, you can feel that vibration through your body. And
that's always been an intuitive thing for me, but what is it about the sound that accentuates your orgasmic potential?
Well, I think, you know, speaking from a male perspective, sound's just been something I've been playing with for over a year now, and what I think it does, what I find it does for me is it helps. So, you know, you're building up all this energy. You've got all this charge going on, and you know, as a man, you're trying to contain it and hold on to it. You don't want to go over the cliff too soon. When you start making sound with it, it really helps you start being able to direct the energy away from your genitals by using different tones. It will resonate in different parts of your body, and it sort of brings your awareness to that part of that body. And also there's sort of like a slight controlled release, you know, when I'm really feeling overwhelmed, like I might have an orgasm any second, if I can start making a large sound, that sort of like gives a place for all that charge to go besides the orgasm.
Huh.
It's sort of like a pressure valve being released.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't
know specifically, but I do know.
Valerie, what'd you say?
Oh, I was saying, I'm not sure scientifically how it works, but I do know, like I've learned in the Tantra experiences that I've had that, you know, different sounds vibrate in different parts of the body.
Right.
Like if you say, ah, that vibrates more in the heart, and ooh, vibrates more in the genitals. And there's, you know, different sounds for different parts of the body. So I'm not sure, like, the physiological reasons for that, but it's
okay,
definitely
so
something
say
that
again. Goes in the genitals.
Yeah, like if you're
and ooh, goes
ooh,
in the heart.
Ooh.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you say e, you can really feel it in your sinuses. E.
Huh. And you know what? I can feel it too.
Yeah, and I know, I mean, Barbara Corrales, for example, teaches in her classes, she has people do not just the different notes, but the different pitches of sound. So if you go, it's like, you know, more grunting in your genitals and like, you feel more in your head. So,
I mean, another thing that comes from Barbara.
But
right.
She has people do like a whole
E-I-E-I-O.
Yeah, it's one of the things in the Ipsilu class that they're saying, now you know what old MacDonald was really doing on his farm.
E-I-E-I-O. Oh, no!
No, that's not something you want to think about, but it's quite funny.
Oh, my God.
Another way of thinking about the sound and like, how that sounding is helping that process is, something that came from Barbara, is that when you're putting your focus, you're putting your consciousness and your attention to another part of your body, whether it's through sound or just concentration, or maybe you're touching yourself or feeling where your partner's hands are on your body, that wherever you're putting that consciousness, that whatever energy there is flows there. So that by doing that, it's helping to draw that energy that you're building up through your genitals into those areas of your body.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. If you think about that scientifically, your nervous system is electrical. So just, if you're thinking a lot, your electricity, your neurons are firing in your brain, you're not going to feel as much in your body. But if you're putting all your attention in your right hand, and you notice, you imagine you're breathing into your right hand, and you're imagining your right hand a particular color, and you're imagining it 5 times bigger than it is, and you really feel the air on your skin and the textures of sensation inside your hand, and you really just focus on the temperature and the pressure and everything in the sensation of the hand, then you'll notice that, your right hand feels a lot more sensation than your left hand. And it's just because there's more neurons firing in that part of your brain that is aware of your right hand.
Right.
But, that means there's more energy there. What is energy? Energy is electricity. Your nervous system is electrical.
Right.
So, the way that translates into sexual energy is that if your attention is on the sensations in your body, because most people's attention is on their genitals and on what's turning them on, but if you're really focusing on the sensation in your whole body, then there's going to be more, that there's a bigger container for the energy to go. So there's just going to be more sensation in your whole body. And, we're in Manhattan, so we do work with a lot of intellectual people, and I just encourage people to try it. It's like you don't have to believe any of this, but just, we teach practices that use the breath and that use body awareness, and, people have amazing experiences.
Do you use meditation in concert with your sexuality?
Definitely. We do that personally, sort of in our own sensual and sexual practices. We have we have meditation practices, and especially in our group workshops, we'll sort of lead meditation to the beginning to get people a lot more centered and focused in their bodies.
Right.
And we'll do that with private clients as well. We often, after we sort of just sat down, discussed what we're going to do in the given session, then a lot of times we'll lead with a meditation just to get people sort of out of their heads and into the experience.
Right. I teach a meditation, a masturbation meditation, and I actually ask my clients to do like a half-hour meditation followed with some kind of half-hour of yoga or qigong, and then move into the masturbation. By that time, you are so thoroughly in your body and in your breath, and you've raised a lot of chi, that some beautiful things really have a chance to happen.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It switches. And, our sex life is very varied, so we don't always do meditation. Sometimes we just have spontaneous fucking. It's all the full spectrum, and sometimes we just make it, spiritual and do different meditations and connect the heart with the genitals and, really feel love for each other and then cuddle.
Right.
So it's really the full spectrum in our personal life. But definitely with clients, we we always like do some sort of meditation in the beginning because it is so, you know, you're running around Manhattan, you're not going to be in your body. I mean, you don't want to be in your body when you're overwhelmed with whatever's going on in the street. You really want to be focused on getting where you're going. And so when people come in here, they're like still in, like, you know, running through the Manhattan streets mode. And so we'll definitely have people take deep breaths. And
so Facebook, we have got a couple of comments here. They're just real short ones. I asked, how do you expand your orgasms? Do you have full body orgasms? If so, how do you do it? And we've got Greg Autry. He says the secret is in the breath. So it sounds like Greg may be taking some of the same classes that we are.
One of those
and then Manning Caitlin. Manning Caitlin says, I squirt. So what about it, Valerie? Is there any connection between the G-spot and female ejaculation with expanded orgasms?
That's a great question. I'm not sure if they're directly related, although an effect of using the PC muscles in some of the practices that expand orgasm, especially the relaxing them is part of, like, fully relaxing those muscles is part of what can cause a woman to ejaculate when it's stimulated. So,
okay.
You know, a lot of these tantric practices talk about building a strong set of PC muscles so you can squeeze them really hard, which helps to move the energy around your body. But with ejaculating, you really have to learn how to relax them and push out because that's, like, what, you know, causes the fluid to be released. Although, personally, and we do, I do talk about that with some of my female clients. Although, for me, I've only ejaculated while we've had sex because it's such an emotional thing for me. I think, like, when, I don't know why, but ejaculation is so emotional. Like, the times when I've done it is when I felt like we're having really slow sex and I'm just, like, relaxing into it. And the build-up towards the orgasm is so so emotional. And then all of a sudden, like, I'll just release something. It's never happened to me during the stimulation with a finger. But for a lot of women, they, you know, they have to have their G-spot massaged. And, you know, so every woman is very different in that.
We are very different. You know, for myself, female ejaculation is not an emotional event. It feels great, but I'm pretty comfortable doing it with just about anybody under any circumstances. I don't, you know, get, like, bonded or feel vulnerable and want to be held or anything. But for me, the internal orgasm, that internal full-body orgasm is the one that makes me feel very, very, very vulnerable, and often I'll cry and I want to be held. So it's interesting how different we can all be.
Oh, totally. But yeah, I don't know if there's a direct causality between the expanded orgasm and ejaculation. Although, I mean, definitely, like, learning how to feel your PC muscles and, you know, because the urethral sponge is the G-spot. And so, I mean, it's connected to your PC muscles, you know, which are done in some of the expanded orgasm practices.
Yeah, it's interesting now where the medical profession weighs in on this. They finally decided that there is something called a prostate, a female prostate, and I guess they decided that in 2001. But now they're still having this dilemma about, is there a G-spot, and if so, where is it? And some people feel that the G-spot moves around and that it's associated with the female prostate but not necessarily synonymous with it. To me, it sounds like a bunch of to-do about nothing. If any of these people had actually had their finger on a G-spot, I think they'd be shutting up about it already.
Exactly. It definitely, like, feels different. Although I do think that the sensitive part can move. You know, sometimes people will be more sensitive in one spot because their urethral sponge is a very large, you know, I mean, I say large, it's like, you know.
Well, now see that the female
thumb,
prostate is about the length of a thumb.
Right, exactly. It is about the length of the thumb. And then, of course, it engorges with fluid when it's stimulated.
Right.
And
then let's not forget that the vaginal canal actually has some erectile tissue behind the walls, and it varies from woman to woman. Some women don't seem to have any, some have a lot, some have a little. It's distributed sporadically. So sometimes a woman will actually be feeling something up there, and it may or may not actually be a G-spot.
Right, right. I know. It's like pinpointing it to one spot. I mean, there's so many sensitive parts of the vagina, or the yoni, or the pussy, or whatever you want to call it. But
right.
The inside of the vagina, it's all these different points. I mean, in Tantra, it's thought that what they call the G-spot, or the urethral sponge, is, you know, stimulating it really stimulates the second chakra of the woman. But, you know, I mean, the second chakra is associated with not only sexuality, but with emotions and with the whole concept of eros, of, you know, feeling the sensations in your whole body. So, I mean, to narrow it down to one point is like, you know.
And there is, that's the whole thing. People get so focused on, you know, like the little button, like they were trying to operate a machine. When, as a living, breathing organism, we're capable of achieving orgasms without having genitals at all.
Right.
You know, and anybody who's gone into Tantra knows that you could just breathe yourself into amazing orgasms. So.
Exactly. And that's what we teach in our energy orgasm workshop. It's all clothes on, no genital touch. We just teach people different breathing practices and different ways to move their body, and, you know, people have all kinds of releases and, you know, feel all kinds of sensations. And
absolutely.
You know,
just the variety of reactions in those workshops. I mean, it's totally across the board. It's amazing to think all these people just have the same experience with such huge variety in results.
I think that's the other thing, too. People sometimes keep wanting to chase the same orgasm over and over again, and I think we have to think of sex as being this amazing journey, and it's very unpredictable, and it isn't under our control, and that's part of its charm.
and I think that's one of the charms of the practice of doing these breath orgasm techniques, is because it's such a totally new experience for some people that they don't know what to expect. So they really are in the moment, where if they're in a sort of a traditional or special experience, they're probably, if they've been chasing the same orgasm all their life, they're going to keep doing that. But this sort of opens a window, like, oh, wait, there's different ways I can feel this sort of thing. There's different ways of getting there and different results at the end. So that can sort of bring that idea and that open-mindedness back into their sort of everyday sexuality.
Right. So now let's talk about the full body orgasm. First of all, what is a full body orgasm? Valerie?
Mm-hmm. Well, the way that I define it is just that you have that involuntary release, that you experience that with your whole body, as opposed to just like your PC muscles contracting, which is, you know, what most people... especially most women. I mean, I've heard different TV shows or whatever about how you know a woman comes is when her pussy contracts, right? But, you know, it's like that happens in your whole body, and that's what you were talking about before when you said you think about a kriya. That's what a kriya is it's your, you know, where you feel this involuntary movement through your body. You know, you feel your spine undulating, you can feel like your body shaking, and, you know, it just feels so much more expansive. And
I had an experience like that because of some very slow tantric lovemaking that went over the course of 3 days. And it activated something inside of me that lasted for an entire month.
Wow.
And it was intoxicating, it was delicious, and a little bit frightening. Can you talk to some of the fear that might come up when you start opening some of these doors? And also, are there any are there any precautions that people need to take when they start opening these kind of doors? Because a kriya actually is kind of a precursor to a kundalini awakening, isn't it?
It certainly, they say that a kriya is, you know, the energy trying to move through you, and it comes up against the block. And the blocks are usually, you know, some sort of emotional holding that we have in our bodies where, you know, we're holding tension somewhere, and it's usually something we created from the past where we were trying not to feel something.
Okay.
You know, which is the reason why we contracted is, for whatever reason, if we were experiencing trauma at the time or, you know, and for, you know, trauma can be defined just as, you know, having an embarrassing experience. You know, it doesn't have to be where you were abused or it could have been.
Okay.
So what happens when you start to open up all this stuff energetically is that a lot of repressed emotions can come out. So it is important to be, that's why in the past when people were learning these experience, you know, these techniques, from a guru in the past, and I don't claim to be a guru, but, that they weren't given these techniques, or the tantra techniques until they'd been doing yoga and meditating and really working on their clearing their emotional body for years. Because repressed emotions will come up. So, you know, if you're already, you know, if you've experienced trauma in the past or, you know, somebody has a lot of repressed memories, it's definitely should be advised to be working with a therapist around that stuff. And, you know, to have a fairly evolved spiritual practice as well. Like, I didn't really start experimenting with the energetic stuff until I had been practicing yoga for a few years and doing meditation and a lot of self-inquiry for a few years. Because I notice, you know, emotions come up in my personal tantra practice, which involves just a lot of breathing and meditation. And I know how to hold space for that with myself. And of course I was blessed enough not to have experienced any major trauma in my life. So it's never anything extremely intense, but of course we're human. So, you know, everyone has emotions come up. And I mean, the mature thing to do with emotions when they come out during one of these practices is just to allow them to be released through the breath and through making sound and just, you know, surrendering whatever you're holding on to some sort of higher power.
When you have these emotions come up, I think you said best when you're saying, you know, to hold your own space for them, to sort of let yourself feel them in your body to the best extent that you can, and keep your consciousness on that and on your breath, but to sort of keep an awareness that, you know, this is just an emotional reaction, to stay embodied with it and not get caught back up in whatever thoughts you have built up around what a particular memory around this experience or something similar. And you know, as long as you start getting caught up in storytelling to yourself when it happens, I think that's when you kind of short-circuit the process. You go back to what's holding on to that trauma in the first place. It's sort of gotten locked in your head, and you've been trying to hold on to this nasty feeling because it was too much to feel at the time. Well, now, you know, presumably you're in a safe space that you're doing this sort of exercise. You know, nothing is immediately a danger to you, so you have the time now. This emotion's come up at this time and at this place because now's the time and the place that you're going to be able to deal with it.
This actually intersects with something that I have been starting to teach, which is using orgasms to grieve, to release anger. In other words, to use orgasms as a way to do access emotions that are really difficult to get to.
Yeah, totally.
Have you guys used that in your practice at all?
Oh, definitely.
Because it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Especially in my personal practice. For me, I mean, it's all about being able to open up to to experience who I really am more and more, which is pure love and pure awareness. And I mean, it's important for me to make the distinction, and for, you know, this is Tantra as a spiritual practice, of seeing myself as the witness, like who I am as the witness of the fear or of the sadness that comes up. And so in that space, you know, instead of being like, oh, I'm sad or I'm afraid and here's why, and telling myself a story of it, like you said, I can just say, oh, I'm watching my body release this. Who I am is just watching, and with unconditional love and acceptance for whatever's happening in my body. And I can cry, and I can, you know, shake with the fear, and I can scream and just let it out. And then, you know, because it's whatever happened in the past, you know, I might remember it, I might not, but just to be able to have my body be more free afterwards.
And then your soul, when you say, aren't they one and the same? It's not just your body, but also your spirit.
Well, sure. I mean, I don't make a distinction there either. I believe that my body is a manifestation of my spirit. You know, it's my spirit in physical form. But, you know, it's my belief, and that's, you know, tantric philosophy belief. But, you know.
Well, I think the important thing here is that we're actually talking about experience. Because, you've got a lot of different backgrounds here. You're obviously very eclectic, so I don't think you've got, like, a rigid dogma that you're ascribing to. I think you're you're really basing this on your own experiences.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, sometimes I've, you know, cried during our lovemaking because Bruce and I have the intimacy for me to do that, but definitely in my personal practice, I do a lot of this stuff by myself. It is just fully this oceanic experience, you know, where I'm just pure sensation, and yeah, there's no belief that can survive in that space. It just is. and I believe, you know, that's, for me, that one of the most beautiful experiences to have is where you're just surrendered to the moment, and, you know, feeling like I'm not breathing, but I'm being breathed by something bigger than me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, okay, so that's something I'd like both of you to address. I'm going to start with you, Bruce. The idea that really accessing the full body expanded orgasm requires a great deal of letting go. So if what most people do is experience this kind of, you know, clenching, holding their breath, and then this little orgasm that is kind of like a sneeze, how do we help people to open up to the idea of, and the practice of, actually breathing, making noise? I mean, a lot of people are afraid somebody's going to hear them. They might have children, they might have neighbors, they might have roommates, you know, and people are sometimes very concerned about who's going to hear them doing this. Do you have any recommendations, you know, and this is a two-part question. One, when you're afraid that other people are going to hear you or find out and judge you, and two, when you yourself are just so used to being controlled and polite and, you know, you don't fart, you don't belch, you don't do a lot of things, and all of a sudden somebody's giving you permission to female ejaculate and scream, and, you know, how can you even really allow yourself to do that? Start with you, Bruce.
Well, I guess I'll start with the first question about just being afraid of embarrassing the neighbors. You know, there's always ways to get around that. I think, you know, you might have to apply a little forethought to the time you're going to do it, make sure that your roommate isn't home, or, you know, for instance, in our space that we work out of, we have noise dampening machines. You know, if we have clients here and they want to make noise and make machines, we have little white noise generators so that you can't hear anything outside of the apartment because of the background noise that these things make.
Wow.
And they're relatively inexpensive and easy to find. So having something like that can really be a psychological comfort zone. You know, you realize there's something in place to make that safe, and it really helps you let go, you know.
Yeah, is that white noise that we're talking about, or?
Yeah, they're just little white noise machines. And
okay, all right, thank you. I had never thought about that, and I actually had a client ask me about this just a week ago, and you know, the best I could come up with was, you know, wait till the kids are out of at school or something. So that's great. Would that work for a parent who is trying to, you know, create a little private time for themselves?
I guess it would help. I mean, the specific situation they're in, as far as, you know, what room they're in, what room the kid's in. The main point is that you just want to put this sort of machine in between the source of noise and where you don't want it to be heard. So if the parents shared a wall with the kid's bedroom, they'd want to put it up against that wall.
Okay.
Know?
Yeah. Sure. You know, I could totally see that. And then, or run the washing machine too. if it
sure.
happens to be
air
somewhere
conditioners, big
warm.
Help. Yeah.
Yeah, unless it's way out in the garage or something. Okay, and Valerie, Bruce, go ahead and answer the other part, which is just, you know, our very controlled society. You know, how do you get past
sure.
that training?
You know, I think that's a little that's a little more challenging, because it's not something you can just fix with a trip to Radio Shack. It's something
right.
where you've got to give yourself permission, and you've got to feel safe, and you've got to know what you need to have those things in place. You know, it's certainly something that that challenges me from time to time still. And I think a lot of it, I'd say one of the key things in sort of learning to go is really to have that trust with your partner. If you're not with a partner that you have that with, then just exploring by yourself and giving yourself permission to let it really be an exploration. Not that you, as you put it, are chasing the same orgasm in your masturbation, but you're really giving yourself the time to connect with yourself and doing exercises like you mentioned before, starting with the meditation, starting with yoga, something to break the routine of what your usual sexual experience is right from the beginning, so
right.
you don't fall into whatever script or rut or scene that you have traditionally played over and over again, but you know, break new ground. I think that's really the essence. And the part of that too is just, you know, the biggest thing that can get in the way is a sense of expectation that you know how it's going to end, or there is an end to get to.
Right.
As soon as you sort of drop this thought that, like, okay, I'm going to have this. I'm doing this so I can have an ejaculatory orgasm. If you can let that go, you know, really not make that the purpose, not make that the goal, that opens up a world of different sensation and possibilities.
It does. It really does. Now, sometimes those little doors, we go knocking on them, and they can be frightening. Valerie seemed to think that was about blocked emotions that hadn't been processed, or did I hear you right or wrong, Valerie?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it is. Certainly,
I think
for
you
me.
Were more talking about Kriya at that point, the spontaneous muscular contractions.
Right.
But what
you
about
know, when also, right? What you're talking about is different, which is just, you know, if you're it's just scary to try new things.
Well, I was thinking that actually some people have an aversion to, quote-unquote, too much pleasure. Do you ever see that? Ever deal with that?
Oh, sure. Oh, all the time. And when I do, you know, and it is just, you know, human beings are creatures of habit, and And that's not a bad thing. I mean, we're just used to doing things a certain way, and any change is scary. You know, I don't care if you're, like, trying on, you know, a new way of dressing, and, like, it doesn't have to be shame around sexuality. It could be anything. Starting a new job is scary. I mean, moving to a new place is scary. Any kind of change is scary. And so how I deal with clients with that is just having the change be really small and incremental. So what Bruce just said about, like, shifting the, okay, it's not about getting to the goal of orgasm, it's about the journey along the way. Even just that small shift, you don't have to do anything else differently, but start out with that, which is huge. I mean, that's like a huge paradigm shift for most people around sexuality. That can be the first step. And then the next step can just be, you know, notice, even just with your personal masturbation, notice what happens when you take really long, deep breaths as opposed to really short, shallow breaths. Notice the difference that you feel in the sensation in your body. Or, you know, the next time you self-pleasure, touch your entire body when you self-pleasure. And maybe, you know, like, squeeze your muscles and give yourself little scratches, maybe, like, slap your butt. You know, do different things to different parts of your body. I mean, even those tiny little steps can have a huge effect on how you experience your sensations during, you know, during your sensual play. And so I think once people get used to their, like, oh, okay, I tried this new thing and it's not totally crazy and weird, like, I actually felt better, then you're more likely to try on new things. And I always encourage people to try this stuff on, like, you would try on clothing in a clothing store. You know, like, oh, I'm just going to try on this sweater to see if it looks good on me. And, you know, you're not committed to buying it unless you really like it. So, like, if you hate this stuff when you try it, then maybe it's not for you and you can go back to your old way. So, you know, it's not like we're going to totally rock your world. Maybe it won't. Maybe you don't like it. And, you know, so then there's really nothing to be scared of. It's not like a cult where we're going to indoctrinate you and, you know, change your whole, you know, force you to live a certain way and, you know.
So, you know, I think you do have to kind of give up. You know, a lot of people are rushed. They want to just hurry up and get that orgasm because they know that it'll help them go to sleep or it'll reduce their stress or something, and they're kind of using it like medication. And what you're really talking about here is more like learning how to take the time to say I'm important enough to make love to myself.
Oh, sure. Definitely.
Absolutely.
I mean, and
yeah.
It is.
But I mean, also, we're not... I just want to make the point, there's also, I mean, it's not like there isn't a place for that kind of, like, quick medicinal sex, you know, the cookie before going to bed or whatever, you know, there's nothing
right,
wrong with
right.
that. We just are introducing the idea that there's room and lives can be benefited from expanding the range of sexual experiences to include more of these things as well.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we still have cookies sometimes. I mean, it's cool, like... I think it's more along the lines of, like, you know, I think a lot of people are going to a restaurant and ordering the same thing on the menu every single time. And, you know, it's like we're talking about, like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with getting the spaghetti and meatballs or whatever, you know, unless you're vegetarian.
Well, exactly.
It's like sometimes you want to get something else.
Right,
you know,
and
it's about having a
branch out. You can wind up with food allergies. No, I'm just kidding.
Right, exactly. Too much of one thing. Yeah, and there's, you know, it's the shame-free zone, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with anything that anyone's doing unless you're hurting somebody.
Exactly.
Right? You know, or whatever. I just think that people crave variety too, and you know this is just a way to like increase the amount of choices that you have. And I mean, for me, this practice is, I mean, it's a spiritual practice for me in that, I mean, the way that I got into this was through studying, you know, holistic living. And I noticed that I naturally crave the things that are good for me when I'm embodied. So, you know, this practice for me is about learning how to develop more and more, to tune in more and more to the intelligence of my body, so that I can have my body lead me towards choosing the highest choices for me. And the only way that it can do that, I mean, you know, I just experienced, like, I eat really healthy and, you know, I exercise, but it's not because I think I should. It's just because it feels really good for me. And so just learning to do, you know, things that are really pleasurable for me and also really good for me, I feel like that's just how it feels right for me to live. And that's why these practices make sense to me.
So, and Valerie, can we talk a little bit about women in particular feeling like they, you know, being preoccupied perhaps with how they look, how they sound, or am I sweating? I mean, this is a big obstacle for a lot of women to get past, to really be able to let go.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Do you have any tips that you could offer women who are listening tonight on just exactly how they can get past that?
Sure. There's a few things. I mean, especially going back to being able to make love to yourself, like what you were saying.
Right.
I really advocate women developing some sort of self-loving ritual. Like when I'm feeling down on myself, I'll, you know, take a bath with candlelight and, you know, play music that I love and really make love to myself, really explore what kind of touch feels good to me, what way feels good to me, and not think it's supposed to be a certain way. You know, because there's this whole, you know, there's so much pressure that we feel as women to be a certain way, to please people or to impress people or to turn people on. And really to come back to this idea of nurturing ourselves and loving ourselves and just really exploring what feels good to us. I did a lot of that when I was between relationships. And, you know, now Bruce and I will experiment with giving each other body work. You know, so I receive a lot from him, but I feel like I deserve that. And, you know, he deserves it when I give to him. But when I was, you know, by myself and living by myself, I would, you know, create time for myself to give myself pleasure and to really honor my desires, to touch myself and to, you know, give myself sensual enjoyment because I felt like I deserved that. And the more I focus on what feels good to me, the less I'm focused on, you know, like, how I should be or how I should look. You know, it's funny. I mean, Bruce kind of makes fun of me sometimes because I have two really big mirrors and I will frequently, he'll catch me like standing in front of the mirror and I just admire myself. So
awesome.
That's another tip that I give to women. I mean, women are so, you know, I talk to so many women who say that they hate looking in the mirror because they focus on their flaws and that's really just habit. Like, it's just, you know, if you do something a lot of times, you'll be more likely to do it. So it's about shifting
right. Your
habits to focusing on what you love about yourself.
Absolutely.
I mean, I saw a woman who, she only loved her eyes, but then it's like, great. Like, look in your eyes every day and just focus on how much you love your eyes. And, you know, like, life is too short to focus on what you don't like, you know? I mean, it's not like the thoughts that you don't like it are bad, I mean, because you don't want to judge the judgments, right? But just, like, you know, say, great, I don't like my body. What do I like? Ooh, I like the size of my breasts, or I love the smoothness of my skin, or I love the flowy, curly hair that I have, or, you know, whatever. I do happen to like my butt, but, you know, say I love myself. You know, I mean, of course there's parts of myself that I don't like, but I don't focus on that, you know? It's just
whatever you focus on gets bigger. It's interesting. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Bruce?
I didn't say anything.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Oh, I was just saying, whatever you focus on gets bigger in your awareness.
It does.
You know,
it does. Like, and one of the most important things, too, about being sexy and attractive is that you've got to feel it. And, you know, so that you communicate that with your body language. So it's really sad that women spend so much time picking themselves apart and then walk around kind of communicating, there's this thing wrong with me and that thing wrong with me, because then you draw attention.
Yeah.
I think life's too short.
I always cite an example of a really good friend of mine. I've known her since I was a teenager, and she has always been the most really love-centered person. You know, she's got a lot of love for everyone around her, and she's got a lot of love for herself. And you know, she's overweight. She's been overweight all the time I've known her, you know, all these years. But she is still incredibly sexy just because she believes that she's incredibly sexy. And there's nothing that's ever going to convince her differently. And it comes out. And it doesn't, at some level, it just doesn't matter what you look like anymore. It's what you believe about yourself that people see.
Yeah, I actually talk about that in my book, Sex Circus of Escorts. I talk about how in the old-time movies, you know, Marilyn Monroe might have had a few extra pounds, and Lauren Bacall might have been flat-chested, but they both knew how to move in a way that was just so seductive. And then nowadays, it's like, you know, oh, look at my rock-hard abs, but I don't have the slightest idea how to move.
Right, exactly.
Sure.
I don't find it as sexy.
I
think, you know, somebody who knows how to handle themselves in a seductive way, is that's what's hot.
I definitely recommend for women, there's these classes called S Factor. I don't know if you've heard of them.
What is it called?
It's S Factor. S is in Sam.
Okay.
This woman, Sheila Kelly, she invented this whole series of erotic dance classes for women. But it's not based on performance or looking sexy. It's based on getting in touch with how your body moves in an authentic way that's sexy. So the lights in the room are turned down really low, like hardly anyone can see each other. And there's no mirrors anywhere. But there's a woman that's leading other women through, like, you know, just pulling out, like, what expression you have in this moment for yourself. And the women that come out of those classes are so, just feel so much better about themselves. And
you know,
I took those classes for a year.
I think that stuff is so important. I was at a conference, and there were two women in the room, and one was older, and you could tell she was older, but she just moved in a way that was so, like, she loved her body and was proud of her body and comfortable in her body and just happy and not afraid to smile, right? And there was another woman in the room who had very obviously had lots of plastic surgery, the breast implants, cheek implants, eye lifts, facelift, I mean, the works, right? And she didn't look, she looked younger than the other woman. Looked like she actually had been younger than the other woman before the surgery. But everything was, you know, the face wouldn't move, and there were no expression lines. The breasts wouldn't move. They were rock hard. And she just sat there like this Barbie doll, this frozen, hard, plastic Barbie doll. And I thought to myself, my God, I mean, that's kind of where we are now, you know, is like, this is supposed to be beautiful. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's so not beautiful.
Yeah.
So I just, it makes my heart grieve when I think how, you know, all of us as women have really bought into some of the technologies that have been shoved in our faces instead of you know, really celebrating what you're talking about, which is breathing and moving and being fully engaged and fully alive.
Yeah. It's true. It makes me sad, too, and, you know, I just think that everyone's on their own journey.
Oh, yeah. It's not to say that, you know, there's anything wrong with plastic surgery. I've never had any, but I reserve the right to get a facelift at any time I decide. But I think the attitude that you go, you know, you could have, you know, moderate work done, or you can just be so terrified that anything might move, that anything might sweat, that anything might breathe, that,
right.
You know, you just keep pulling it up and pulling it up until you don't even look human anymore.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and what's important is that you feel good. So if this woman who had had this plastic surgery was alive and vibrant and felt good about herself because of it, then it would have been a different story. But
well, it turned out the older woman had had plastic surgery too, but she was she wasn't obsessive about it, so it looked totally different on her. Everything was moving,
yeah.
And sexy and vibrant, and. And hadn't been Botoxed and pulled all to, you know, to where it just didn't look like a human being anymore.
It's what that internal attitude is, you know. It's really so little to do with the casing. It's really, you know, what our self-image is, not our exterior.
Absolutely. And if you, you know, are pursuing some kind of body modification and it works for you and actually helps you dance and helps you move and helps you have orgasms, then I think that's great.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But if you're just going to sit there like you're in a picture and you're trying not to breathe.
Right.
Oh. Yeah. So we are out of time, you guys, and you guys have been great. I want to give you a chance here to tell the folks that are listening how they can find you. I mentioned your website again, any books or upcoming interviews you might have coming, and workshops and services. Go for it.
Thank you. Well, as you mentioned, our website again is idealintimacy.com, IDEALINTIMACY. And we are in New York City. We do private sessions for men, women, and couples in New York City within their boundaries. So it's talk-based coaching as well as teaching experiential practices. And one of the things we love to do as well is to teach couples how to give each other erotic bodywork, which is just such a wonderful new way to connect with each other, as well as teaching more how to give and receive fully, which just helps on so many levels, there's a whole article about it that I wrote on my website. And as far as workshops go, we really teach at this point by request. So if you get a group together, we work with groups of 10 or more, and because there's just such wonderful group energy. We're going to be teaching a big group workshop on the sensual body work at a festival called PEX. This summer in Maryland. It's PEX, P-E-X, Summer Festival, and that should be very, very fun. But right now we're really focusing on the private sessions. Perhaps we'll do some teleclasses.
I just want to add, too, Valerie's had a few sessions now with Skype as well, so that's definitely something we can do for people who can't make it to New York.
Isn't Skype great? I had my first Skype session a couple months ago. It was somebody all the way in Germany.
Yeah, that's great. That's true. Skype is great. And I also do phone coaching, both give and receive phone coaching. So that works. It obviously depends on the type of practice that somebody wants to learn.
Yeah, I think that coaching and even therapy, I think, is headed in the direction of being by telephone and Skype nowadays. So I know a lot of people are still really wanting to see face-to-face, and sometimes I feel that way, too. When I you know, work with a coach or a therapist, I want to see them face-to-face sometimes, not always. But
I work with people
too busy and too mobile. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Valerie.
Oh, I mean, I receive coaching over the phone, and, you know, I think it's great. So
It is awesome. You get, I like working over the phone because I don't get distracted by other things, you know, like how should we sit and what are we wearing. I can just really track energy.
Yeah, and then people can feel a greater level of anonymity over the phone, too.
They can. I find some people will share a little more candidly, huh?
Right. Sometimes people can be themselves more that way.
I think so, too. I think so, too. Bruce, you have anything you want to add to the mix here before we sign off?
No, I just want to thank you for having us on. This has been a real delight for me. I'm sure I can say that for Valerie as well.
Well, you guys were great, and we'll have you back sometime, maybe 6 months down the road or so, especially if you have like some workshops that you want to let us know about. That'd be great.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Bruce just got a new day job, so we're not thinking about workshops currently, but you never know in 6 months. what we'll have up our sleeves or down our sleeves or other articles of clothing.
Okay. All right, Bruce, Valerie, you be good to each other, and you enjoy that new energy, new relationship energy. I think, according to my calculations, you got about 30 days left.
Okay.
Thanks so much for joining us in the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you. You've been great, too, and we've had a lot of fun.
Oh, good. Glad you had fun. I had fun, too. And good night to you, and good night to my listeners. We'll check in with you next week, Monday, same time, 9 mm-hmm. o'clock. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.